South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, June 30, 2022. Sudanese take to the streets in Khartoum and across Sudan in mass anti-coup protests.
In the capital, Khartoum, today, heavy security deployment could be seen significantly around the government essential institutions.
And the head of the UN mission in South Sudan expresses concern over delays in implementing the 2018 peace agreement.
My main concern is that the end of the transitional period is fast approaching, yet progress in implementing the peace agreement has been slow.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese took to the streets in the largest anti-coup protests in recent months, demanding military leaders step down from power. Military authorities announced strict security measures, including the closure of bridges linking the tri-capital ahead of the marches. Authorities also shut down the internet and disrupted local telephone communications all over Sudan this morning. For more on this, I reach out to VOA's reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum.
In the capital, Khartoum, today, heavy security deployment could be seen significantly around the government essential institutions and along the streets and before the bridges linking the three cities of Khartoum, Omdurman, and Khartoum North. And then these bridges are also like blocked to prevent protesters from approaching the presidential palace. The protesters announced earlier that their final destination is towards the presidential palace in Khartoum. As we speak, internet services and telephone lines have been shut down since morning. Only international calls, you know, can go through. At around 11 a.m. local time, the protesters started moving from the area called Bashdar in Khartoum South, you know, trying to make their way towards the presidential palace. So police used tear gas against them, and as they tried to head to the presidential palace. So the protesters in Khartoum lately, around afternoon this afternoon, the protesters managed to break the first police roadblock near the Sherwani bus station in Khartoum as they keep on, you know, moving towards the palace. So as we speak, the protesters are less than 1 kilometer away from the presidential palace. So we don't know exactly if they will make their way towards the palace, or there might be, a heavy deployment again to prevent them from reaching the presidential palace in Khartoum.
Yes, Michael, you're speaking with us from Khartoum South in El Kalakla. What is the atmosphere like where you are? Are you able to move around, and what are people saying?
I moved around this morning. I went up to the nearby local market. I could see some shops open, and especially, vegetables and other foodstuff. People are, you know, purchasing their day-to-day living things. And I could see also some few minibuses and buses are going towards Khartoum or going towards what's called the central market. So the life seems to be, this side seems to be normal as such, but yet there are few movement only along the road. There are few vehicles that could be seen on the road, and most people are just sitting, you know, along the road, along the roadside, and many are inside their houses, you know, looking after their families and other stuff like that.
So the protesters are headed to the presidential palace where General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan is. But is there a particular reason they chose June the 30th? Because protests have been going on for months. Why June the 30th to go to the palace?
Okay, 3 years ago on this day, 30th of June 2019, the Sudanese Professional Association, together with the Forces for Freedom and Change, which is a coalition of different political parties and other civilian groups, staged a mass protest in Khartoum in Khartoum, demanding the military council by then to leave power and allow the civilian to take over the country. Remember, June 30th is only 2 months after the ousting of President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, 2019. So during this period of 2 months, the military council by then was the one in charge of the country, and they tried to push away the civilian and the political parties and all. So on this day, in 2019, they called for a mass protest and they protested, and they actually forced the military council to accept that they are able to share power with the civilian. They are able even to sit together and negotiate the way forward for the transitional period in Sudan.
And finally, the head of the UN mission in Sudan warned security forces against using violence to repress protesters. U.S. officials here did the same. Are there any reported casualties or injuries so far today?
I only came across a report of one protester got injured, and according to the reports, medical reports here, it was due to live bullet in Omdurman, and a few other maybe tens or dozens of them have been experiencing difficulties in breathing, especially towards among the protesters who are heading towards the presidential palace in Khartoum, because there was a heavy use of tear gas by the police just to prevent them from advancing towards the presidential palace, as the Khartoum state acting governor has called on them earlier on to try to keep away from the essential institutional government and all this. So they use a lot of force, they use a lot of tear gas to prevent the protesters. So up to this moment, there is no much report about casualties being reported.
That was South Sudan in Focus reporter Michael Atit speaking with me from Khartoum this past hour. Still in Sudan, a group of U.S. lawmakers, including Democratic Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, Chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and Ranking Committee Member Republican Senator Jim Ridge of Idaho, issued a bipartisan statement on Wednesday urging Sudanese security forces to, quote, refrain from using violence to suppress peaceful protests and to respect the rights of the Sudanese people to advocate for change without fear of reprisal, end quote. The statement issued ahead of today's planned mass protests call on the leaders of Sudan security forces to, quote, return to their barracks and yield power to civilian authorities who have earned the trust of Sudan's people. The lawmakers also urge the U.S. government and other members of the international community to curb impunity by imposing targeted sanctions on security force leaders responsible for gross violations of human rights. The statement says that in the 8 months since the October 2021 military coup, security forces have killed more than 100 protesters, injured thousands, raided hospitals in search of the wounded and the medical professionals who treat them, and subjected protesters to arbitrary arrest, torture, and sexual violence in some cases. The statement released by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee also noted what it called another failure of the military junta to protect citizens in Darfur, where it said the situation also significantly deteriorated with more than 100 killed and thousands more displaced by recent violence. The The ONU mischief is reiterating the UN's concern over delays in implementing the 2018 peace agreement, saying as its expiration date draws near, a number of chapters have largely remained unimplemented. Nicholas Haysom, a special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, says it's time the parties make compromises and demonstrate leadership and collective purpose by working together to fully implement the deal. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
UNMISS boss Nicholas Haysom says time is running out and yet critical decisions on implementing key provisions of the peace deal, such as conduct of elections, work on a permanent constitution making and legislation of key laws as defined by the agreement, have not been completed. Haysom says although there is some progress, he is concerned time is running out without action being taken on other key parts of the deal.
My main concern is that the end of the transitional period is fast approaching, yet progress in implementing the peace agreement has been slow. With only 8 months remaining, the window of opportunity to implement the key benchmarks is closing.
Haysom says the parties need to demonstrate a further commitment to ensuring that remaining provisions in the deal are implemented soon.
What is required is national leadership, dedicated resources for completing the transition, and a visible commitment by South Sudan's leaders to fulfill their responsibilities under the peace agreement. I call on all parties to demonstrate collective common purpose, unity of purpose, by working together towards the full implementation of the agreement. I encourage the leaders to take the necessary steps for the country to exit its transitional period through the conduct of free, fair, credible, and peaceful elections.
According to the peace deal's timeline, the transitional government of national unity shall expire by February next year. Although the parties have tried to implement Chapter 1 of the peace agreement, it has not been completed. Some officials have yet to be appointed to both national and state commissions as the deal required in Chapter 1. Chapter 2 of the deal, which covers security arrangements, has largely remained unimplemented. In April, the parties committed to the graduation of the unified forces, but that has yet to happen. Haysom is calling on the parties to put more energy into working out key provisions of the agreement, such as writing a permanent constitution, completing security arrangements, and passing legislation of key acts as defined by the peace agreement.
Graduation of the National Unified Forces is long overdue. The country must have a fully functioning, truly national security apparatus to ensure safe and secure environment, but also as a prerequisite for citizens to vote, to express their will at the polls. Thirdly, the parties must work with the National Constitutional Amendment Committee to review the National Elections Act of 2012. This will provide the legislative framework for launching the electoral process and the formation of the National Elections Commission.
Observers have accused the signatories, especially the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in government, of having no political will to effectively implement the peace deal. Government spokesperson Michael McQuay has repeatedly denied the accusation, arguing that a lack of resources and imposing certain provisions in the deal is responsible for the delays. Haysom says it's time to act.
I'm urging the government and all parties to redouble their efforts to agree on a roadmap with clear benchmarks, timelines, and priority tasks. This has been jointly called for by the African Union, IGAD, RJMAP, the UN, and other members of the international community. It is particularly our hope that the parties will announce a formal election timetable.
Haysom says UNMISS stands ready to support conducting the country's elections, but says the UN wants the roadmap and the program outlining activities leading up to the elections worked out first. The timeline of the peace agreement requires that elections are conducted 2 months to the end of the transitional period. the parties are expected to enact a new constitution, graduate the unified security forces, and pass an elections law before conducting the election. For VOA News, I'm Mwaki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear from lawmakers in South Sudan on the recent violence in Warrap State. Stay tuned for that report right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what puts a smile on your face?
I have a group called Lishi. It's a group full of young children. So when I dance with them, it puts a smile on my face. It makes me happy.
What puts a smile on my face is good food and good people.
Okay, when I see good food and good friends around, well, I smile.
My husband really puts a smile on my face. He cracks jokes. He likes cracking jokes, and that makes me happy.
One thing that puts a smile on my face is to see somebody who's been in trouble or who has had great challenges, and then he has broken through, his life is better, their lives have improved, their marriages, their business. It brings joy to my heart to see people becoming better.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some lawmakers in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly say weapons in the hands of civilians is the cause of continuous violence in the country, including the recent deadly clashes in Warrap State. One MP who represents Thorn North County in the Assembly says the national government should disarm the civil population to avoid further bloodshed. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
MP Coronel Omawien, who represents Thorn North County in the National Assembly, says he was shocked to hear about the staggering loss of life last weekend when armed civilians clashed with security forces. Officials said 25 people were killed during the clashes. Omawien says the rampant proliferation of guns in the hands of civilians is the chief reason for continuous violence across the country, including the fighting in Thorn North. He says the national government should speed up the disarmament exercise to confiscate small firearms among citizens, which he says would prevent more deadly violence.
All our local population to be disarmed, and those who are making a resistance for disarmament, these are the people who are causing all this problem. These are the people who are resisting the local authority to operate. So as the government, we need to put in place all the civilians to be disarmed. Arms should be only with those who are in uniform.
Mawien says law enforcement agencies should arrest those suspected of fueling the violence in Tonj and hold them accountable for their actions.
This incident is isolated incident. There is no need for it. And some few groups, individuals that are in the community causing this incident, government should have access to apprehend them and bring them to books.
Chagwer Adong, an MP representing Thorn East in the National Assembly, says this marks the fourth time in recent years that civilians have clashed with government forces in Warrap State. Adong says the government should investigate every incident to establish whether they were instigated by civilians or armed forces.
It is not good all the time that the civilians fight with their own children who are their own soldiers who are there to protect them. It's really very negative. And it is not good also for our soldiers to have clashes with their own citizens. These things is very bad. It needs to be investigated thoroughly what triggered these clashes all the time. Because if that one is known, then the corrective measures will be in place. If the soldiers are going another time, they will go knowing that this is how they are going to handle this.
Some civil society activists and peace observers have attributed rampant intercommunal hostilities in South Sudan to the easy accessibility of guns in most communities and the weak capacity of law enforcement agencies to prevail over ethnic militias. Edmond Yakani, head of the Community Empowerment for Progress organization, says dozens of people were killed in the past week alone.
Last week only, in a 1 week from Monday to Sunday, last week we lost 60 lives of innocent civilians, and nobody will be held accountable, and nobody will be named behind that. And we have over 200 individuals injured in communal violence. So these violence are becoming deadly and they're becoming politically motivated.
Some activists say the government's inability to implement findings of committees set up to investigate previous incidents of violence is the reason violence continues to unabated in the country. Yakani says the investigation committee on the Annette intercommunal clashes found that some prominent personalities were involved in fomenting the violence, including Bona Malwal and Dr. Francis Madingding, but the government has yet to act on the report's findings, which he says will only encourage more intercommunal violence. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
Ethiopia's ruling party said this week it wants the African Union to mediate any peace talks to end the war with Tigrayan forces. But the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, has said it does not trust the AU and wants Kenya to mediate. Henry Wilkins reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Our Ethiopian Justice Minister Gedeon Timotheos came on Tuesday once again making clear the government's desire for the African Union partnering with the United States to mediate peace negotiations with the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The TPLF, however, has said it does not trust the AU and would favour Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta playing the role. So, why are the two sides opposed even at this early stage in negotiations, and how does it bode for future talks? William Davidson is an analyst with the International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research organization.
The position of Tigray's government seems to be based around a concern from the outset of the conflict that the African Union Commission chairperson expressed some support for the Ethiopian federal military campaign in Tigray. I don't think that the federal government feels that the African Union has much sort of coercive power at its disposal, and therefore it's a mediator that is better able to handle.
The AU headquarters is also located in Addis Ababa. Solomon Gawadi, a lecturer in law at Jijiga University in Ethiopia, says he suspects Kenya would not be a neutral party in negotiations.
Because Kenya has certain border and environmental issues with regard to Ethiopia, maybe it may involve into any partiality or any sort of factors that will lead Kenya into neutral, right? So I think the African Union is a better place, right, than Kenya.
Davidson goes on to say that these kinds of disagreements are normal and can be overcome.
So no particular reason why the Kenyan government can't work alongside the African Union and its envoy as a sort of compromise solution. And that's certainly what's necessary, because given what's at stake here, it's vitally important that these sorts of procedural wrangling don't distract from the parties getting down to substantive talks.
Complicating the negotiations is the fact some analysts and politicians have said peace talks should involve actors in the conflict apart from the TPLF and the government. In particular, the Ethiopian regional governments of Amhara and Afar and the national government of Eritrea. Eritrean troops joined the Ethiopian government in fighting against the TPLF in the north of Ethiopia, bringing to an end a decades-long standoff between the two nations. The war between Tigrayan forces and Ethiopia's federal government has raged since November 2020. An estimated 5.1 million people were displaced by the conflict in 2021. Ghent University in Belgium says up to 500,000 people have died so far because of the conflict, either in fighting or because of the humanitarian crisis it has caused. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF, warns that young girls in Africa are forced into early marriages and female genital mutilation at an alarming rate. The number of children at risk of dropping out of school across Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia due to severe drought has tripled within 3 months. Moreno Jambo reports.
Child marriage has doubled in the last year in East Africa, as many families are marrying off their girls due to severe drought and female genital mutilation, or FGM, which is required by many cultures for marriage. According to UNICEF analysis, adolescent girls are in danger of several child protection risks, including undergoing FGM and being forced into marriage. UNICEF's Deputy Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, Rania Dagash, says families are facing desperate choices species to survive as drought driven by climate change and increased food and fuel prices hit hard.
The drought crisis in the Horn of Africa is impacting children beyond nutrition and water scarcity. Women and girls in affected areas are having to walk longer distances to access water and other basic needs, leaving them vulnerable to sexual violence. We know child marriages is on the rise, and girls as young as 12 are being forced into early marriage and female genital mutilation at alarming rates. In the worst affected places in Ethiopia, child marriage has more than doubled in the space of 1 year.
According to the Famine Early Warning Network, more than 1.8 million children are in desperate need of treatment for life-threatening severe acute malnutrition in the region. In Kenya, girls from 14 counties affected by drought are in danger of undergoing FGM at younger ages as families prepare them for marriage. Dagash says UNICEF lacks funds to address the situation.
Economic downfall and skyrocketing food prices push more parents to marry off girls to secure dowries and help support the rest of the family. They see it as one less mouth to feed or a desperate attempt to help the bride to have a better life. Services to address child protection and gender-based violence need to be urgently scaled up, including investment in mobile teams to reach the most vulnerable. UNICEF knows what to do and how to support women and girls at risk, but we cannot do it alone. We urgently need funds so that we can try to reach every child with the help they need.
UNICEF says the number of children are at risk of dropping out of school in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia due to impact of drought has tripled in just 3 months, from 1.1 million to an estimate of 3.3 million children. Across Africa, 4 rainy seasons have failed for the last 2 years, with forecasts suggesting 5th rainy season from October to December is also likely to fail. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And that's all we prepared for you this Thursday. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, cars, and on your phones. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Zaman motoro zede mate turu dumara. Zaman matara zede mate turu dumara. Bambe mokaimo moya hilo wasaki. Bambe mokaimo moya hilo wasaki. De marana madairo zikiri adabu zede marana madairo zaman baradi zede marana madairo ya bai guri chugwa gye. ya bai guri jogwa je wa shine dunga mayar me fare wa shine dunga mayar me fare de ku kandara kan sagiya kamuni fungaru fare